The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like, it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Hannah Berner from Giggly Squad. Have you ever put on a bra that makes you feel like a goddess? Prepare to be obsessed with the Dream Angels Wicked Bra from Victoria's Secret, the iconic brand behind the world's most comfortable bras. And I only wear the most comfortable bras. The bestseller features an innovative sling for perfect lift without padding, and the fit is chef's kiss. Awaken your inner goddess with new colors and super femme lace embroidery. Find out why this bra has thousands of five-star reviews and counting. Shop it in stores and online at victoriassecret.com.
Howdy, howdy, ho, and welcome to Fantasy Fan Fellas. I'm Hayden, producer of the Fantasy Fangirls podcast and your resident lover of all things Sanderson.
And I'm Steven, your bookish internet goofball, but you can call me the Smash Daddy.
And we are currently deep diving Brandon Sanderson's fantasy epic, Mistborn. But here's the catch. Steven here has not read Mistborn before.
That's right, hey. So each week, you'll get my unfiltered, raw reactions to every single chapter.
And along the way, we'll do character deep dives, magic explainers, and Steven will even try to guess what's next. Spoiler alert, he'll be wrong.
Newsflash, I'm never wrong. Episodes come out every Wednesday, and you can find Fantasy Fan Fellas wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Psych Legal Pop podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about popular culture through the lens of an attorney and a therapist. I'm Brooke Brigham. I'm the attorney.
And I'm Tess Brigham. I'm the therapist.
And today we are going to be talking about a new documentary that literally just came out.
Yes.
It's called Stop the Insanity, Finding Susan Powder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone of a certain age remembers Susan Powder, Stop the Insanity. She was a fitness, health, nutrition. I don't want to say diet because she was anti-diet. She mm-hmm. was against yes. the diet industry.
Mm-hmm.
And she her motto, Stop the Insanity, was like aimed at saying, you don't need to be doing all these crazy diets and different mm-hmm. things. What you need to do is you need to eat real food, whole foods, not processed foods, and you need to move your body and you need to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do all those things, you will be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So she was in the 90s, very, very, very popular. She was introduced to America through an infomercial.
Yeah, the number one infomercial in the world, apparently. It was huge.
And she was selling, I don't know, she was selling some kind of a kit that had recipes in it. And I don't know, you know, it was like mm-hmm. just a little kit, but people went crazy for it. And mm-hmm. she's just highly, highly energetic and positive. And, you know, she's got all this energy and she's just all over the place. And she had this buzz cut and her hair was dyed like platinum blonde. And she had this very unique look, very unique energy. And so that then blossomed into all kinds of other things, you know, a talk show, books, a radio show. She became one of the most famous women in America.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of disappeared.
Yes.
And we'll get into, you know, all the details about how she got to that point where she kind of disappeared. But I first heard about this movie on the Jeff Lewis show on Sirius XM. He had her on as a guest. I want to say, I don't know if it was this year, it might have been late 2024, but he had her on one day as a guest. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Susan Powder? What? I'm like, where has she been and why is she on this show and what is she doing? And I'm not sure quite how she got on the show initially, but she came on the show and told her story about, you know, where she's been for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And she had written a memoir recently. And myself included, all the Jeff Lewis listeners bought her memoir, mm-hmm. and went on Amazon and ordered it. And, you know, overnight she had made, you know, thousands of dollars.
Oh, good, good.
Book sales, which, you know, she was very, you know, grateful for. And so we heard about her life, and she talked about this documentary that was going to be coming out. And then since then, he has had her on the show several times. And then she was on yesterday with the filmmaker, Zebariah Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were promoting the opening, premiere. It came out on like Amazon Prime and Apple TV and all those things yesterday. And so Zeb was talking about how he came to be interested in this and how he ended up finding Susan. And so he came from a background of, he was a producer on the James Corden.
Yeah.
He was a producer for the entire run of that show, but he always wanted to do documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had already been looking for Susan Powder. Like, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. He'd been looking for her. Uh-huh. He was wondering what had happened to her. And he tracked her down finally going through like some old, I mean, the way he did it, I mean, he lucked, kind of was a little bit of luck, but he found some old Instagram account that belonged to her, although it didn't have her image on it, but he was trying to narrow it down to where he thought she might be living or what she might be doing. And he said he saw this picture of a head of cabbage. And he's like, you know, I think that looks like something Susan would put up. So back then you had to use a phone number to sign up for your phone number had to be part of your Instagram page or something. So anyway, there was a phone number on there.
Mm.
And he texted her and he's like, you know, is this Susan Powder? And she's like, yeah. And she's living in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked if he could come, you know, the next day and see her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay. And so he went to go see her and he talked to her and he was talking to her initially, you know, wanting to talk her into letting him do a documentary about her. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, I don't know. She was kind of reticent. And, but anyway, on his way home, so he happens to be in a text thread with Jamie Lee Curtis because he produced her on the Late Late Show and they had some sort of, he was part of a group text that she was in. It was like a gratitude group.
Mm.
They would text things that they were grateful for. So he texted into the group that that day he was grateful that he found Susan Powder.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately Jamie Lee Curtis texted him immediately. And she wired him money to make the film the next day.
Wow. Yeah. I noticed that she was one of the executive producers. So yeah. And I was like, I was trying to figure out when we saw Jamie Lee, like what's her part in all of this?
Yeah.
So but that's, Yeah.
How she was involved. Because, you know, she said in the film, she's like, well, naturally, if there was ever a movie about Susan Powder, I would play her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she's not wrong.
She's not wrong at all. And so then he went, he had the money, went back the next day with, you know, a little crew and started filming her. And you see in the beginning of the documentary, it's just, it's very raw. You know, the beginning of the documentary is pretty dark because when he first meets her, things have not been going well.
No, not at all.
You know, she basically, the last time we saw her, you know, she had gone broke, you know,
she went bankrupt
for several different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And this really starts out with, you know, her whole thing was very organic, grassroots. And she just happened to, she said she was on a radio show, and some guy named Richard said, you know, I can't lose weight. And she invited him to a class and come to my 4:15 class. And he came, and apparently Richard's brother is this guy, Jerry Frankel. And I'm still not quite sure, like, was he a producer? Like, he must have had connections, but he, you know, proposes to Susan, like, let's do this together. And this is a very good point, which is she kind of felt at the time like, oh, well, I can't afford an attorney, or I don't have time to get an attorney, or I don't, right? Like, she did not question or push back on anyone. And that is when an attorney is your friend. Sometimes you have to spend money that maybe you don't feel like you should have to get protected, because this one was a big one. And I think this is also this generational piece of, she said, I was the first one in my family to make money. She's originally from Australia. There's just something about, like, if you don't know, you don't know. She's just very trusting. And so why would this Jerry guy lie to her?
Yeah, and she was way, 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 way too way trusting. Too trusting.
Yes.
Yeah. But that was part of, like you said, her appeal.
Yes.
Everything she did was very organic, you know, so... You know, the story is that she got married, had two kids within 11 months of each other, was 260 pounds, was, you know, not doing well, finds out her husband's cheating on her. And, you know, she had to support her children. She ended up working as a stripper.
Oh, she did? I didn't know
that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
She lost, you know, half her body weight. She did it by literally, she said she would put her kids in their little strollers and put them under a tree in the shade. And she would just walk back and forth across the lawn. You know, she didn't have money for any kind of gym membership or anything. And she just started eating better and, you know, walking. And then she worked at a strip club. She talked about this on Jeff Lewis and made a lot of money, you know. Made a lot of money. And this is in Texas. Like in the 80s, and, you know, these men would go to these strip clubs, these oil men, and, you know, just spend all kinds of money. So, you know, she's just always been super resourceful. And then she, you know, she started holding aerobics classes in this studio space, and then she somehow started a studio. I mean, she was just going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and building up and building up, and she just is fearless.
Yeah. I mean, I think that because she first started out doing aerobics, you know, teaching at this person's studio, and the person's like, no, you're talking too much, or you're giving too much advice, or you're doing this. We don't like the way you're doing this. Just teach. And that's when she was like, oh, forget you. I'm going to go. And she said, I had no money. So I asked this, like, I found a studio that was, abandoned. And, you know, I guess apparently the landlord or someone like let her in and let her build her studio there.
Yeah.
But that whole thing of she was trusting her own process and trusting her own instincts, and very much was like, she sees this as like, I am these women, like we are all the same. And you know, I'm going to talk to them the way in which I would want to be, you know,
right.
spoken to.
Because she had been there before.
And I have to say, I appreciate just now that I see, I mean, you know, the last time I read any of her stuff, this was before I went to grad school, before I became a therapist. But seeing it now, I'm like, oh yeah, this stuff that she's talking about and the way she's delivering it is actually, it is good. Like the way she's describing it, because she's not just saying, you got to eat, you know, you know, it's more of whole, you know, you got to eat whole foods. And then she's going through, and she would do that shopping with Susan thing where, you know, and it just seemed like, okay, yeah, she is really approaching this from a different place, differently than anybody else. And I think especially at that time, the examples that we had were, you know, either the Richard Simmons or we had, you know, Jane Fonda. That was more the 80s, but there weren't a lot of like women that you felt like, oh, I could really relate to you that were out there talking about working out and diet and exercise and all that stuff.
Yeah, she was very non-judgmental.
Yes, that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah. Came across. And then, unfortunately for her, she got hooked up with two people who ended up just ruining her life.
Yeah, and just, dear God.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this guy, Jerry, who's, you know, brother of the guy who came to the gym, he's, you know, some kind of, I don't know, investor, businessman, I don't exactly know, flim-flam man, actually.
Yeah, he's a shyster.
Yeah. So he says to her, look, you know, I'm going to finance you. I think he initially invested like $800,000 in her, you know, new enterprises. And he said, but we're going to be 50-50 partners, which was a lie. Because on paper, again, I don't know if she ever read this contract.
Yeah.
But on paper, he had a 51% interest. So he controlled everything. She couldn't do anything without him. And then she hires this PR person named Rusty Robertson, who became like her best friend.
Yeah.
And she also, you know, took advantage of her and came to her one day and said, you know, because she was acting as her manager. Agent.
No, she was, understanding was she hired her for PR and that she was her PR person. And as her PR person, maybe she was doing kind of like, because PR and management, there is a little bit of this overlap, but it is, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought she said that Rusty approached her and said, managers normally get 10%. But I think I should have 50%.
Yeah.
And Susan's like, okay.
Yeah.
Now mind you, this is 50% of 49%.
Yes.
Because that's all Susan has.
Yes.
So now she has, you know, 28.5%.
Plus, she also didn't, I don't know if she didn't realize this or not, all the expenses were being taken out of her 28%.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, oh wait, it's less than 25. Sorry, 24% or whatever it is. Because they have to divide 49.
Oh yeah, 49, so it'd be 20. It would be 25.
It would be 24. 24.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's paying all the expenses. And she said even at the height, she never made more than $200,000 a year. Now, $200,000 a year
on paper.
On paper. In 1990, whatever, is very different than $200,000 in today's economy. But for the fact that she built this, what, 300 million, billion, still making money. This,
I think it was like a $50 million. That sounds familiar.
I heard 300 million at one point, but again, she kind of throws out numbers and then, you know, we don't have the exact facts, but she made a shitload of money and she had a ton of stuff, tons of products, tons of all of it. And what she said was, she said, this is what businessmen do to talent. I didn't realize, you know, she's like, I didn't realize this is what people do, that they might come at you like they have your best interest, but they don't. And God, the Rusty one, I think is worse because she's supposed to be her friend and she really believed in her and liked her. And really you're going to take that level, you know, you're going to.
Well, and then she also found out that Rusty was going behind her back and using Susan's connections. Rusty was getting other clients and getting paid from other people. And Susan thought that she was just exclusively.
Yeah, because that's what 50% would mean. If you if you're saying 50, I bet you anything, Rusty's like, I can devote all my time to you, all my time, all my energy to you. It has to be, but it has to be 50%.
Right.
And I was saying to you before, listen, managers do make 10%, sometimes 15, but PR people are a monthly fee. And some are $5,000 a month and some are $10,000 a month and some are $20,000 a month, but they are a monthly fee that it should not, you know, it shouldn't be a percentage.
No.
And so that's shady too.
Yeah. That was super shady.
Yeah.
So, and part of the deal also that Susan didn't realize until it was too late was that this contract that she had with Jerry, he owned her name, her likeness, her whatever, everything. Like he owned the right to use the name Susan Powder on anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when she discovers that, you know, what's going on, she's now embroiled in this legal dispute with Frankel, and it cost her like $6.5 million. And, you know, just to get to, she was really fighting to get her name back.
Yeah.
But anyway, between that legal case and whatever she, all the money she's paying all these people, at the end of the day, she's broke.
Yeah.
And she had to file for personal bankruptcy, you know, because she couldn't pay all of these debts. And that is what started this, kind of spiral into poverty.
Yeah.
You know, extreme poverty. Now, and at the time, I don't know what year was this.
She's
66
she moved,
now.
Yeah, she moved to Las Vegas in 2016. And she says, I moved there thinking that I was going to be embarking on a new chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
She wanted to start like an internet-based show where she did cooking and lifestyles kind of stuff. But she said she realized she couldn't get a job unless she was Susan Powder. She had to be that character that everyone was familiar with. And, you know, she doesn't really get into much detail about how she went from, you know, I'm going to start over to, you know, living in a weekly welfare.
Motel. Yeah. So because of the, because she has no money and because she doesn't have great credit. She was struggling. She couldn't get an apartment. She couldn't get that. So she ends up living at this place called Harbor Island, which is like a weekly welfare motel. And she just starts talking about it. And it sounds, I mean, she actually plays a video of how loud and
the sounds.
I mean, oh my God. It like never, ever ended. People are screaming. People are, you know, yelling. Cops are there. People are going to the bathroom outside your door. There's cockroaches everywhere. I mean, it's awful. It's truly awful. And she didn't have a car, I guess. And so she was walking. And the other thing she actually points out in this documentary, she makes a lot of comments about, not her, but she's really illustrating how this cycle of poverty is so hard to get out of and how in some way it's like, because of, you know, there's not a Whole Foods next to Harbor Island. So she would have to walk miles and miles and miles to go to CVS to buy food or the 99 cent store.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that it was like, you can't get fresh vegetables. You're not getting fresh meats and things like that there. She's, you know, she's not getting anything. And so it creates this other thing, this other part of this where people, you know, if you are living in these neighborhoods, if you are in this hotel, like, motel, it's a little bit of where are you going to eat? Okay, you're going to eat crap.
Fast food.
You're going to eat fast food because it's the cheapest.
Or food and from 7-Eleven or whatever's there.
Yeah. And then that sort of creates this cycle of, you know, because it hurts your health and it you know, it makes life hard and all of those things. It's just, it's such the cycle that she just got, it felt like for a long time, got kind of stuck in that cycle.
Oh yeah,
I couldn't get out.
It sucks the life out of you, and
yeah,
because they kind of recreate, because this is being filmed after she's moved out of Harbor Island. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of recreating her journey that she would have to take to get food.
Yeah.
So mind you, the Las Vegas in the summer is like 115 degrees.
It's relentless.
So she was walking in the Vegas heat, 7 miles to the closest place where you could get something resembling real food, which was CVS. And, you know, they show her in the CVS, you know, trying to find whatever she could. I did notice there were some bananas in there. Mm-hmm. And they had a little bit of fresh fruit and stuff. But then, you know, they had some, you know how it's,
yeah.
It's hit and miss, you know, who knows what they're going to have in there. And so then she gets her couple bags of groceries because she has to carry it back.
Mm-hmm. She can't get too much.
She's
got a 17 mile walk.
Yeah. And then another 7 miles back home. Yeah. And she would do this, you know, I guess at least once a week.
Yeah.
And she didn't have a car at that point.
Yeah, she does have 3 sons. And she asked for the sons not to, she didn't want her sons to participate in this. And she is very, very proud. Way too proud. Because I would have been up on those sons. I'm like, hello, you know, it's my turn. I would have been like living with them.
Yeah. And one of her sons is an attorney. I mean, these are men who have means. And I'm sure that they offered her help a million times. And I think she said something like, finally, they just stopped saying anything about it because they knew she would never accept it. She was not going to do it. Mm-hmm. She was so proud. And I think that that's a little bit to her detriment, not a little bit, a lot to her detriment. And I don't know why things could have been so different. You know, if she would have just let them help her, she wouldn't have had to suffer.
Yeah.
For all
plus, he's
years.
A lawyer. He could help you unpiece all this stuff, help you figure out what can you do, what are you able to do. And the other thing I thought was strange is why she said, I couldn't get a job unless I was Susan Powder, but why can't you be Susan Powder? Was it just like, but everyone's expecting me to do the same, stop the insanity, and I can't do that because of the liability? Is that it?
Well, I think she just didn't, like, that was over. Like, she didn't want to do that. And in fact, she stopped using that phrase, stop the insanity, you know, even before everything fell apart, because she just thought it was too trite. You know, it was like, okay, enough with this already. I think she was trying to be taken a little more seriously, or, you know, because she really wanted to do more. Because we see all these clips of her. She says she became a personality.
Yeah.
You know, she started out as one thing and then she just became this personality. And they show all these clips of her on all these TV shows and on all the late night shows and all the creepy men, you know, like Larry King and Jay Leno and all those people who just want to talk about her hair. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like she became a character. Caricature of herself, you know, and she didn't want to be that. She wanted to teach people how to, you know, make good food and
You know, the other thing is that she also, because she had no control over her career, she kind of kept getting, it sounded like she kept getting bullied into doing these videos that were worse. She said dumber and dumber and dumber. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to move to a more authentic, you know, she's like, there's an authenticity is leaving. And I think some of this too is there is something about like when someone becomes that successful, I understand you have to strike while the iron's hot, but there is a tipping point. And I do think like the talk show, like, I don't think the talk show was right for her. Right. Mm-hmm. But it was just one thing after another, like do this now, do this now, do this now. And I think that and again, I feel for her, which is she just didn't ever look. She trusted everyone. She didn't like Jerry, but I mean, she just never looked at the bank balance and ever asked to see, never like, where's the money going?
Yeah, she never once asked to look at any financial documents. Mm-hmm. She just put her complete trust and faith in. And gosh, yeah, I don't know where that comes from, that willingness to just, it's almost like she just didn't even want to, like, she felt like she'd be bothering them or something.
Yeah.
She didn't want to be a bother. Oh, you know, I trust you. Oh my God.
And so a lot of this stuff is if Susan Powder was Dave Powder,
right?
This would be very different. Right. You know, maybe he might have run into some guy shady, Jerry Frankel. But again, I think this is part of this conditioning with women. And I can see it with myself, with my own business, where I, you know, I just had to make a business decision where I'm like, oh, I'm going to hurt this person's feelings. And then I'm like, what am I doing? Like, dollars and cents wise, like, I'm looking at this. I can't do this. I don't want to, nor do I, should I have to. So there is that feeling, I think, especially if you're someone like Susan, who really does care about people. Like, she was never in this for the money. It was never about the money for her. It has always been about like speaking to people and wanting to get this message out. And she has this big personality. So I think she does like being a performer. I think she does like being on the stage. But that conditioning, especially for women of a certain age, that conditioning of don't rock the boat, you know, don't be a bother. Don't do this. Right. Don't do that. And it's rough because you know that you're going to stick up for yourself and you know that they're probably thinking, God, what a bitch. And it's, you just have to sort of be like, okay, fine. Then think that way about me.
Yeah. And right. I'm really curious about her childhood. I couldn't find any, she doesn't talk about, she was born in Australia.
Yeah. And raised in a convent. I thought was so weird. I was like, so where were your parents?
Well, her parents were there. I think they lived, I don't know why they were living in the convent, but she had, you know, intact, you know, mother, father, you know, family. And then they all moved to the US when she was 10, but she's never talked about them specifically or what they were like or what her childhood was really like. And I couldn't find any information online about them. So I don't know. There's something happened with her and her conditioning growing up where, it's just like, I don't know. I can't be a bother to anybody, you know?
I will say she is a funny one because we see her. So she makes money. I don't think currently, but at the time of this documentary, she was making money through Uber Eats, and you watch her kind of going through, and she's very funny. She's like, where do you live? This isn't where you said that was. This isn't the directions, blah, blah, blah. I mean, she gets very frustrated with people. And
well, she was right. That guy, she's like, that guy was so stupid. And it's like, yeah. She's trying to ask him, where do I go? And he's like, so I'm with her on that one.
Oh, no. And I never thought about like, oh God, what if you live in one of these gated communities where you have like these giant apartment buildings and these complexes that people live in? It's like, oh God, that's a pain. And then the other thing too is, and I'm glad I do this because I always, you know, even though it's the last thing, I always really try to be generous with my tips because I do feel for, I do. And I'm thinking now that was a smart idea because she won't, you know, if you give someone $2, no one wants to pick that up. Do you know what I mean? And especially, again, I, you know, if you're ordering something and it's not that much, I understand that you don't probably want to tip a lot, but I'm sure there are people that are ordering like hundreds of dollars worth of food and tipping $2.
Oh yeah. So, well, you know, a couple summers ago when Layla was home, she did some door dashing and I would help her. I would be her driver because it's impossible to park anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So I would be her driver and I'd pull up and, you know, wait in the car and she would go in the restaurant and get it. And there are people who tip nothing. A lot of people
gross.
Who tip nothing.
Gross.
Disgusting. And then there are people who tip $2 or on a big order. And I'm always, anyone who comes and delivers something to my house or comes to my house to pick up something or do anything, if you're coming to me and I don't have to lift a finger, I'm going to give you a 25% tip.
Yeah.
You know, just.
Yeah, absolutely.
Come on.
Absolutely. I mean, I have it set to that, you know, we're not sitting there debating, like, you know, if you're getting that much food delivered to you, you have enough money to tip this person. Do you know what I mean? So now, you know, we all know that ordering food out is not economically the smartest thing. So there's a little bit of like, now you're going to save money. Now you're going to try to save money. And I know this too, because I have clients who work at Starbucks. Like those tips mean a lot to them.
Yeah,
you know,
I always tip really at least a dollar just for a coffee. Yeah. I know.
Even though Layla's always anti the tipping, I know. But it's still, I feel like if I have it, then shouldn't I give it? Again, this is why I'm not a millionaire. I really, I care way too much about other people, but it's true. And I was just reading this thing the other day about what do rich people know that the rest of us don't know, which is they don't try to find their purpose. They figure out what's going to make them money. and they ruthlessly make that money. And that's how it works. And it's like, I just don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can. Yeah. I have to do what I feel I want to do. And I can't screw people over.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we could be making way more money if we owned a couple laundromats.
Yeah.
Than we're making as two professionals. I mean, seriously.
Oh, should we get a laundromat?
I mean, maybe we should look into it because, you know, work smarter, not harder.
Yes, yes, work smarter. Absolutely, absolutely. That's my 2026 motto. But
yeah,
it
no,
is.
She's like just she's like I won't take anything under $7.
Yeah,
she's you know they offer you these deliveries for you know she was saying $2, you know $5, $6. I mean it's like yeah, and you're gonna drive and you know Las Vegas is. Very spread out.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
It's a lot of driving.
It's a lot of driving. It's very spread out. And yeah, it's friggin' hot.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's a hard place to live. She seems to love it. But I mean, she seems happy there. She said that she's never going to move again. And Steve and I have considered moving to Vegas more than once. But I don't know. So there are some appealing things. But
yeah. So at some point she gets a car because you know we don't know how long it took her to get a car, but she got a car. But the car, this is now her livelihood, you know, because she's driving, you know, delivery with Uber Eats, and you know, there if anything goes wrong with the car, you know, she can't work, and so it sounds to me like. You know, I'm sure those were times where she did let her sons, but it would have to get really low for her to ask them for anything. It's like, you know, her car needs to be fixed. She can't work, you know, but there's a scene where there's something wrong with her car, some weird sound. She takes it to her mechanic who is only charging her like $500, which is not bad. And I'm sure he's doing her a favor. And he's just a nice guy.
You get the sense, because she says it's a family. So you get the sense that they all seem to know her and just are like, we'll just do this for parts. And very kind. And she feels that kindness. Like she really feels things very deeply. Like she feels the kindness and she feels that. And she's like, I could have just texted my son and said, can you pay this? And they would have paid it.
Yeah.
But no, she went home and got out her. She had been saving money. She saved $6,100, which I'm very impressed with. She saved her money and she was like, okay, I'm going to pay it out of my this is my $500. Psych Legal Pop. We'll be back after these messages.
Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Hannah Berner from Giggly Squad. Have you ever put on a bra that makes you feel like a goddess? Prepare to be obsessed with the Dream Angels Wicked Bra from Victoria's Secret, the iconic brand behind the world's most comfortable bras. And I only wear the most comfortable bras. The bestseller features an innovative sling for perfect lift without padding. And the fit is chef's kiss. Awaken your inner goddess with new colors and super femme lace embroidery. Find out why this bra has thousands of five-star reviews and counting. Shop it in stores and online at victoriassecret.com.
But it does look like, I mean, I think the car, it looks, but she did eventually let one of her sons, or maybe more than one, buy her. They probably wanted to buy her a new car, but she was kind of like, but they bought her a used car.
A new used car.
So that she could, and I also understand that too. She's the, you know, you don't want your mom driving around in weird parts of Vegas with a car that's unsafe.
No.
You know?
No. Yeah, and you see just, she kind of has a meltdown after, you know, the car, having to get the car fixed because it's just too much. It's just kind of like, you know, she's so proud of that $6,100 and she should be. Yeah. And she doesn't want to have to touch it. And it's like, but she has to. And, you know, she's, you know, There's so many moments where she's so vulnerable.
Yes.
About, God, this sucks. And this is just mm-hmm. like never ending. And, but you know, she lets herself have a little pity party for about 5 minutes
mm-hmm.
and then she, you know, dries her eyes and moves yeah. on. You
she
know?
Shakes it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing is so interesting because she was talking about, again, I think this is really, I mean, this is a great documentary if you want to show poverty mm-hmm. in the U.S. because the things that are going to layer out are car and car issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was dental.
Yeah.
And dentists, and you know, that's the other one too, which she did say at one point, SAG-AFTRA. And it's like, well, SAG-AFTRA, you can only get that insurance if you're making a certain amount of money. But this is, you know, this is a problem in our society where, yeah, I mean, she breaks a tooth, something happens, she doesn't have insurance. What does she do?
You know what? She did make enough money, but those people stole it from her.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If she had gotten all the money she was entitled
to, fine.
She would have had insurance for life.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Because she would still be working. She'd still be generating all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but it's very much about poverty and how one very small things that we deal with every day that we're just annoyed by will just take someone out.
Mm-hmm.
Just take them out.
Yeah.
And so it's a testament that she's still here and still fighting. I mean,
yeah.
You know, gosh.
Yeah. And there's a scene where she goes online and her products are still being sold.
Mm-hmm.
Online. And she, of course, she doesn't get a dime from any of it. And then one of the things that's been stressing her out for many years is that I guess the last place she lived before Vegas was New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't take all of her stuff with her. So she put it all in storage in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was always worried about something happening and losing that. And she's never able to get there, whatever. So the producers, you know, this production company, whoever, paid for them to bring her stuff up,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was very nice.
Yes. Very nice. She seemed very, and I was shocked she let them do it. I was like, she really wanted this stuff.
I know. They probably downplayed it like, oh, well, we have someone who's going to be driving up here anyway.
Yeah.
From New Mexico. So they can just stop by and pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed like a lot of stuff. And the place she's living in, it didn't seem like she had much furniture in there because they kept loading the stuff in. And I'm like, oh, she seems to have the space for it. I think that also kind of forced her. She was looking at her life again and looking at all these things. What I thought was really interesting is something that happened towards the end of the documentary in terms of her hair. So when mm-hmm. we see Susan, she's got long, dark hair, which is, and again, I think if you just saw her in passing, you wouldn't recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
And, so she is at this point, she's met with Jamie Lee Curtis. She's sort of in this place. We meet her, the book agent that she had once, who seems to be a good guy.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the book agent's a good guy.
From Simon and Schuster.
Yeah. And he, you know, she's giving him the book in this like 50 font. Did you see the font on those pages? It's like, oh, but she gives him this book. So, but she's got all this stuff. And so she wants to get her hair cut. And my guess would be, you know, she can't afford to get her hair cut and colored the way she used to. So she gets it. She tells this guy, you know, she wants it blonde again, but she says, you know, do what you want. And then she gets the haircut, which is very similar to what the original haircut was. And she has this meltdown, this real emotional, really interesting meltdown in front of the mirror where you sort of see herself and realize, I think what she thought was, I'm going to see the old me. I'm going to see me of the 90s, but I'm seeing the person now where my hair is a lot thinner and I have a lot more wrinkles and I don't look the same. I'm not the same person. And I think you really watch her kind of accept that in real time. It's pretty amazing to watch. Like she just goes through it. You watch her just go through the whole thing. So it's also the documentary is very good at sort of showing people like how, this is people go through these moments in their lives and it's tough. Yeah. And it's like, if you just allow yourself to get through it and process it and Because I think this is her, I think this is what has been able to keep her going, is the fact that she can just kind of feel the feelings, get mm-hmm. through it, do that stuff, and then put her head down and keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very interesting. And yeah, it's sort of like accepting that, oh, I'm 66. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. I look in the mirror sometimes. It's like, oof, boy.
Oh, I know.
How did that happen?
Yes. And that's the thing. This is a great movie about, you know, as women, as when you get older, you start to become more invisible, even if you're attractive, you know, it has nothing to do necessarily with attractiveness or not. I think it's more like there is something about age, about how if you're a woman past a certain age, it's like, okay, you're no longer, you know, you can't have children anymore, or, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not mothering anymore, and maybe you're not working anymore, and people see you differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's always surprising to me because I noticed that probably like after I turned 40-ish of, you know, I'm walking around thinking I look cute. I'm thinking I look good, you know, and then realizing like, oh, no one's really paying attention to me the way they used to, you know, and that, I mean, it's hard to realize that. Now, the flip side of it is they're not creepy guys, like, you know, like following you and, you know, any of that. And I feel so ignored that I'm like, oh, no one's paying attention to me. But it is hard because our world makes our looks so important and staying beautiful and staying youthful, and the lengths that we all go, that people go to stay young. And it is very, very hard, but it also coincides with, I think, when women also are like, fuck you, I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? I think there's that other part of it too, where there is that sort of sting of like, oh, no one's paying attention to me. But at the same time, I kind of,
well, you're giving, you know, off the energy of
like, yeah, I don't care.
Don't pay attention to me, please.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you're just, yeah, it is. Cause you're, and also maybe we're just not noticing it, because I think when I was younger, I would kind of be more, and I've noticed, look around and trying to notice like, oh, who's looking at me?
Yeah. Well, that, and also
don't
danger
really do that anymore.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I was always kind of, you know, especially, I didn't live in the best neighborhood in San Francisco for a couple years. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, I just kind of like, where is everybody? What's happening? And so you would notice people. I think the other two thing is, you know, going out to bars where people are looking at you. I think all of that is part of the mix as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is, it is a very shocking thing when you're like, oh, I guess no one really cares what I'm doing, even though I think I look cute.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, it's very vulnerable to be a single older woman, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, if you have a partner, I would imagine, you know, it feels much different, you know, mm-hmm. like, yeah, because you just don't like her, you know, she had her children to fall back on. She didn't want to, but you know, she just had to shoulder everything.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And we never hear about the ex-husband. Like, did he ever see these kids? Did he just run off and leave forever?
Well, no, you know what happened? So she, like, when she got, when she started becoming famous and was making money,
mm-hmm.
she wanted her kids, you know, to have a relationship with their dad. So she like bought a duplex and he lived in one part, she lived in the other, and the kids, you know, would go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't work. He like stayed home because this is when she started working.
Yeah.
She was making the money, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he would stay home with the kids and she was out, you know, being mm-hmm. Susan Powder. And then I think when she moved to LA, was it? Because this was in Texas. And then when she moved to LA and brought him with her.
Yeah.
And I think he eventually like remarried and the wife moved in. And, you know, so she was being very
Yeah, very generous.
Kind and generous.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, taking care of the children is huge. I'm not going to pretend that's not a huge job.
Right. So I don't know what happened after that when the kids were older and whatever. I guess he had to get a job. But I don't know.
The other thing that she talks about that she's very, again, very vulnerable and open is she's like, how much of all of this can I blame on these bad actors and how much of this is me? Mm-hmm. Because, and she is willing to take ownership of, these were bad actors. They did bad things that were wrong. And at the same time, I was not, even though they shouldn't have done that, I was not paying attention. I was not, I was too, I don't know what it was. She didn't really get into why, but it felt a little bit like, I think that especially if you're someone who just works and works hard, you're just going to keep, the solution is work. I'm just going to keep working. I'm going to keep doing. And I think she, recognized that maybe I did this to myself. I should have stopped. I should have asked. I should have hired an attorney. Mm-hmm. I should have done this. I should have, which is hard to be in. But we see her again sort of start up her own LLC or her own incorporation. She got her name back.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she spent her own $500 incorporating. And so she's going to, I feel like I'm here for the Susan 2.0.
Oh, yeah. No, she's making a comeback.
Yeah.
So she has this friend, Marianne.
Mm-hmm.
And she even mentioned Marianne on the Jeff Lewis show. She credits her with helping her to get Social Security. Like she mm-hmm. didn't even know she could get Social Security, and mm-hmm. this woman helped her, walked her through. And that she said that made a huge difference in her life.
I'm sure it did.
Even though her check was not very big because her reported wages for all those mm-hmm. years that she was working, making mm-hmm. making other people millions of dollars. Yeah, she wasn't being paid very much. And so Marianne is helping her, starting up a new website, mm-hmm. formatting her book, all this kind of stuff. So she, she has some good people in her life. And then this guy, Bob from Simon & Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think she's going to make it. She is going to make it. And, so she goes to LA to do this. People Magazine wants to do a mm-hmm. story on her.
That's right. And that's what the hair was for. Yeah.
The hair was for the People Magazine shoot. And, she's trying on clothes. She's getting, for the photo shoot. And, she's just coming back to life. And she's in LA and she got to meet Jamie Lee Curtis in person.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Lee Curtis is crying and, Susan's mm-hmm. crying. And it was just very genuine. And, Susan tells her that she just felt so alone in the world and that this is just obviously changed her life.
Well, and I think Jamie Lee says something, because Jamie Lee Curtis has been sober for 25 years. And she talks about I just saw this article the other day about this criticism of AA and, it was from 100 years ago. And I do think there are pieces of it that maybe don't translate so well to what we know today. But the one thing that it gives you is community and it mm-hmm. gives you people. And what Jamie Lee would say is we speak up in meetings so people know who we are, so that if we're not here, people will come looking for us.
Right.
That someone out there cares. And when you're deep in an addiction, you don't think anybody cares.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of people have isolated you. So there's mm-hmm. that part of it too. But her saying I don't think anyone was looking for Susan Powder. Except for Zeb. Zeb, gosh.
Yeah.
So I think everyone's got to buy her book, her new book. Yes. What's it called?
It's called, hold on a second. It's a letter to M. It's about her dead. It's a letter to her dead dog.
Yeah.
A letter to M. E M.
Okay.
But go on Amazon and just search, Susan Powder.
And then don't buy the other products. Don't buy those other products. Stop
giving
those.
She's not getting any money.
We do not want to give any of those people any money. No. Jerry Frankel died in 2018. So there you go. And Rusty did not want to be part of the show, but Rusty, we see you.
Yeah.
We speak your name. we see you.
We know what you've done.
Yeah.
Yeah. The book, it's like $12 or something.
Yeah. Buy a copy. It's the holidays. Buy a couple copies.
And it's a good book, you know, and a lot of it covers, she talks about all the places that she lived with her dog and, you know, she talks about all this stuff, you know, in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
And
because there is a period of time that the documentary talks about a little bit, but not too much, which is she says, I left LA in 1998 and moved to Seattle. And then there was those years where she had the pink hair and the dreads.
Oh, yeah.
And she was talking about then she was saying that was, you know, she was kind of in this place of not wanting to be like doing, you know, I was teaching classes in a basement and she still wanted to do this work, but it sounds like she just kind of wanted to live a quieter life, I guess. And so there's that period of time.
Yeah. Well, you know, so Ross Matthews is in this mm-hmm. documentary and they show he met her. That was on a cruise ship. She used to do the Rosie O'Donnell, Rosie O'Donnell and her ex-wife used to have like a travel company. Remember the documentary about the cruise, the gay cruise?
Yeah. Did we cover that? Sounds familiar.
No, it's a great documentary though. We mm-hmm. should cover it. But anyway, they had these like gay friendly cruises where, you know, gay families, and you're just gay people in general could go on these cruises and feel comfortable because everybody's mm-hmm. gay and you can just be yourself. And so she worked on those cruise ships teaching aerobics or exercise classes like on the cruises. And yeah, and Ross Matthews is someone who, you know, struggled with his weight and you know, I'm not quite sure why they chose him to be part of it.
Yeah.
It was a little kind of okay, well now here's Ross Matthews, but
yeah, his part not Jamie Lee Curtis made sense once you saw the connection, but yeah, his connection didn't make a lot of sense. But I think, I mean, he does sort of tie into that time of her life. And I think he kind of gives us a sense of who Susan is, that she's right up in your face and like, mm-hmm. you know, what are you eating today? Where are you mm-hmm. moving? What's happening? Which again isn't for everyone. It can't, because he sort of said that it was a lot, you know, it's not for everyone, but her message, even if, you know, you don't need to be, how do I say this? Her message is still a worthwhile message, even if you're someone who's like, I find her too intense or I find mm-hmm. her too this. It's like, but her message is the same. It's still a good message, mm-hmm. which is, you know, and it's, and I think that she, you know, she had this story that I think that a lot of people, she had this story where she had zero, anything to do the work that she did. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's like she did not have a gym equipment. She had two young kids. Mm-hmm. She, her husband left. Like you could imagine that she, yeah, you could probably just keep eating and just be like, F it. I don't care. Yeah. Like, so to see her do what she did, it's impressive. It's very, and I think that was the other part, which is that's what relates to people is just that. That's the difference with the fitness stuff. It's like, you know, if you've never been in my shoes, it's hard for me to relate to you.
Yeah. Well, she has an incredible amount of tenacity.
Yes, she does.
I know that she's going to make a comeback. She already is. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy for her. And, you know, she was also a big feminist and like,
yes,
she had always preached, you know, female empowerment. And, mm-hmm. She actually started towards the end of her, career before this lawsuit and everything blew up. She's wanted to add a component of, okay, yeah, we're going to talk about eating and moving and breathing, but we're also going to talk about like, I think she's thinking or something. She had mm-hmm. some fourth thing where she wanted women to really start to believe in themselves and think mm-hmm. for themselves and, you know, real feminist angle and always mm-hmm. has been. Mm-hmm. And just not afraid to say it. And I mean, yeah, she's just, I love her. So now her plan is she wants to get an RV.
Yes. That's her dream.
That's her dream. And the end of the documentary shows her looking at all these different RVs, and she claims that, you know, she doesn't want a lot of space. She was arguing with Jeff Lewis about this because he's saying, well, I want to come look with you because I want to make sure you get a nice one and not like some, because she's talking about, I don't need much. And he's like, well, no, you do. You need like more space. And I mean, I think her career is going to blow up again and she's going to have a lot of money and might not need to buy an RV.
Well, or she stays there. I mean, I think what's so interesting about that is if you think about it, like, here's Jeff Lewis, who's, you know, I mean, he's in his 50s and he's doing all these shows, but he has help, you know, he's got these houses, but he's got help. He's doing this. Yeah. It's like, you get to a certain point in your life where you're just a little bit like, I can imagine Susan's just like, I don't need that much space, nor do I want to have to track. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a thing. The bigger the house, the more you have to, you know, keep up with stuff.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't blame her, because she also said, well, she doesn't want to travel with it, but she does want to be able to go places and like teach her classes. It's a little unclear what she wants to do with it, but
yeah.
I think now she has choices. She has choices for the first time in a long time.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well,
oof, boy.
Really enjoyed this.
Yeah. And you can find it on, you have to buy it. I found it on Apple TV.
Yeah, or you can rent it. I rented it on Amazon.
Yeah, sorry, I rented it.
$5. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's worth it.
Does she get any of this money?
I hope so.
Yeah, so rent it, buy it.
Yeah, support it. And also the more people who see it, just the more, you know, it helps everything. So
yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoy our podcast and you would like to see more of us, we have a Patreon, and at the $5 level, you get all of the episodes ad-free. You get a weekly bonus episode where we talk about hot topics and what's happening in pop culture and entertainment. And sometimes we talk about our lives, outside of the podcast.
Yes.
Lately, it's been kind of dark, but
yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we're not even telling you everything.
Yeah. Uy.
And then at the $8 level, you get all of that. Plus, you get a monthly bonus true crime episode and a monthly Ask Us Anything episode. And you can find us on all the social medias. We are on YouTube. I don't know how much longer we're going to be doing that because. Because
we don't know why. Like,
we don't know why we're doing it.
We don't know why we're doing it. And also, we keep getting criticized for the way we look, the glasses, that we wear too much black, that we do. It's like,
oh, is that all dear. On YouTube?
No, there were comments that we get on Instagram, but I'm assuming they go to YouTube. I mean, how else would you know what we look like?
Well, we have videos on.
Yeah, okay, maybe
Instagram.
They're just judging us. Maybe they are just judging
we
us.
We have video clips on Instagram.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The comments I've seen on YouTube are actually positive. It's mostly people talking to each other about the show. Like someone will comment about Sister Wives, and then another person will respond.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a place for people to gather and just, you know, talk about Sister Wives or whatever.
Oh gosh, what are we going to do? Who knows?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. But in the meantime, we appreciate your support and hope to see you soon.
Yes. Thank you so much, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
This message comes from Jackson. Taxes aren't something you can only think about once a year. With investments, planning for tax day is year-round. Fortunately, Jackson offers tax-efficient products. Visit jackson.com for more information on how our products can make your tax bill a little bit less painful. Jackson is short for Jackson Financial Incorporated, Jackson National Life Insurance Company, Lansing, Michigan, and Jackson National Life Insurance Company of New York, Purchase, New York.
Hi, this is Hannah Berner from Giggly Squad. Have you ever put on a bra that makes you feel like a goddess? Prepare to be obsessed with the Dream Angels Wicked Bra from Victoria's Secret, the iconic brand behind the world's most comfortable bras. And I only wear the most comfortable bras. The bestseller features an innovative sling for perfect lift without padding, and the fit is chef's kiss. Awaken your inner goddess with new colors and super femme lace embroidery. Find out why this bra has thousands of five-star reviews and counting. Shop it in stores and online at victoriassecret.com.
Howdy, howdy, ho, and welcome to Fantasy Fan Fellas. I'm Hayden, producer of the Fantasy Fangirls podcast and your resident lover of all things Sanderson.
And I'm Steven, your bookish internet goofball, but you can call me the Smash Daddy.
And we are currently deep diving Brandon Sanderson's fantasy epic, Mistborn. But here's the catch. Steven here has not read Mistborn before.
That's right, hey, hey. So each week, you'll get my unfiltered, raw reactions to every single chapter.
And along the way, we'll do character deep dives, magic explainers, and Steven will even try to guess what's next. Spoiler alert, he'll be wrong.
Newsflash, I'm never wrong. Episodes come out every Wednesday, and you can find Fantasy Fan Fellas wherever you get your podcasts.